Hi, I am your host, Brent Feldman, and we are back with another episode of Mix and Matchbox. Today, we are joined by Rachel Hernandez. She is the Director of Marketing at NextNet Media. Hi, Rachel. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really well. Yeah, definitely. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I am definitely looking forward to jumping in on everything. And I think I have pretty straightforward way to jump in on stuff in terms of questions here. And hopefully also later you can address some company questions too about the current organization you're at, but also congratulations on the promotion that you recently received. So yeah. But I'll start out with a real simple one. Alice's teacup. Was something on your LinkedIn profile, and I can't help but notice those things, and I was like, oh, that's cool. But I also feel like it's expressly interesting because, you know, everybody has like these entry points of their career, and I also personally feel like sort of being in the restaurant industry is something, oh my gosh, that provides so many foundational skills. But for you as a starting point in your career, how do you think that that led into what you do now, and you know, what do you think that you kind of pulled out of that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I have to start by saying that I waited tables for about 12 years. Alice's Teacup was one of those spots. I think I was there for like 7 years, and it's a pretty well-known tea house brunch place in Manhattan. And I waited tables for that long because I was an English major in college because I wanted to get into writing and content creation. So, and I think that's fairly common sometimes for people who go into college and come out with an English degree and then they aren't sure what to do next. So that was sort of my entry point into the restaurant industry. And like so many other of my coworkers there who are also in the arts or in theater or whatever, and they've all gone to be super successful. In terms of like the things that you can take from restaurant work as a worker who moves on to a more traditional career path. Oh my gosh, you're so right. Like, I would say number one is communication, especially when it comes to what we do, which is creating content, be it on a podcast or for me, some on a website or in social media. Being able to connect with people and understand the thing that they really want is one of those key things in a restaurant that's super important because people go not for the food necessarily. There are so many places that have great food, but they go for the experience of being taken care of, people feeding them in ways that aren't necessarily like food to mouth consumption, or that was a weird way to put that, but
and they
go for that like comfort and for that understanding. Collaboration, obviously, like across teams, it takes a village to serve brunch sometimes. And I think the multitasking too, anybody who has done restaurant work knows that you have 17 things in your mind at one time, always, and you're carrying those things. And then there can be one more person when you're walking to the kitchen who, you know, grabs you and says, actually, can we get a little more water over here? And you got to add that one and keep the other 17. So yeah, all of those things I think were, had a tremendous impact. And it's interesting too, like we've even had clients at NextNet Media who, came because I worked with their marketing directors or their marketing managers, at Alice's Teacup, and they went on to do marketing and we stayed connected on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, and they see what we're doing here. And so they come to us. So that's been pretty cool too.
That's so cool. Yeah. It is. I couldn't agree with you more that there's like, yeah, the so many things that, you know, come out of restaurants in terms of like, you know, skill set. And I feel like it should be like one of those obligations people have to like go work in a restaurant, deal with the general public and like, oh my gosh, you'll learn humility, you know, that too.
You'll learn so much.
but that's awesome. And so cool that like you not only got good experiences, but also, yeah, maybe even just, yeah, great relationships and all that sort of stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what would you say, I guess, is maybe the, the differences in perspective that you have for a client or a brand when you are a copywriter versus the director of brand strategy or now the director of marketing? Do you see things differently?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I felt so blessed when I became a copywriter about 10 years ago. Oh my gosh. But just because that storytelling has been such an important piece of my life, and you know, it's really nice when you get to do something that you connect with on an emotional level, a spiritual level, but that you're also good at. And I would say the difference is really scale. In my mind, brand strategy or marketing strategy still comes back to that storytelling. And when I copywrite, it really is about telling a story. It's different than just putting, you know, you see that writing that's a bunch of buzzwords on a page, or these days, like, it's very clear, those of us who do this day after day, when something's been written by ChatGPT and has that just like missing human element to it. And I think marketing is storytelling still. You're taking people on a journey. We literally call it a funnel, but rather it be a blog post, or I used to do a lot of email ghostwriting for entrepreneurs. And really connecting to that entrepreneur and getting into their voice and telling their story. I'm selling a story of the client's journey on the other end on a much, much larger scale. And so instead of like the story of how this realtor is going to help you find your home and et cetera, it's the story of how you can find success when you connect to these different marketing principles and work with us.
That's so cool. Yeah. At the core, it's like, yeah, just storytelling. That's really neat. And actually that feeds so well into the next question too, because it, you know, it's storytelling is definitely something that's like foundational, not only to, you know, marketing in general, but you know, literally how we kind of connect as humans. So, you know, how does storytelling differ from, you know, pure content, just generation? And why is that critical for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the difference between something you want to read and something you have to read.
Okay.
It is a critical element. And whether it's marketing or, you know, getting somebody to read your tweets or your blog posts, or you are doing it on behalf of a brand or a corporation, you want people to engage with the content that you're creating. Content that's simply generated is, I think, it lacks that connection to the reader. And if you're not connecting with the reader and you're not connecting with your audience, you are fumbling the ball. Like, you're not letting anything land. Storytelling to me is really connecting to like a greater meaning, like something beyond. Great marketing gives people a feeling. They're not just connecting with the words on the page. They're really seeing how those words connect to their own journey. And to me, that's what storytelling is about. And what I think we'll probably get into AI, because who isn't getting into AI these days in conversations like this? But one of the things where ChatGPT and similar softwares fail is that they are just generating that content and they are missing that soulful human connection.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's still that uncanny valley, you know, whether it's like, you know, the images you see created, obviously, you know, like there's that, you know, I don't know, the distance, that weird, you know, sort of feeling. You're like, oh yeah, I don't quite get the connection. But while you couldn't have said it better in terms of like, you know, creating content that you want to read, because like that is such a difference, I feel like, in, you know, making things compelling. Ooh, I have a small tangent though. And that's in, like, I read this article all about, like, you know, clickbait, you know, titles, and those like got such a bad rap, you know, like, or clickbait in general gets a bad rap. But as you know, like the article was breaking it down, it was talking about how, essentially clickbait is, it can maybe not be bad as long as it delivers on the purpose of, yes, you know, what the title is. So yeah, I don't know if you have an opinion on that, but.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, clickbait, I think clickbait, the bait is the part that people have a problem with. The click part, we all want the click part. It's the bait and switch aspect of clickbait. You know, you won't believe what happens next, and what happens next is something that happens every single day. But if it delivers on the promise and you were excited to click on it, then that's a good read. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's a win for developing good content, I guess. Cool. Okay. I guess, you know, that feeding right into the next thing. Getting people within the first 5 seconds has been like a, you know, hallmark of like YouTube strategy. But like when it comes to content and storytelling, this kind of, you know, hook them or lose them rule, is mm-hmm. that still important? I know we just talked about clickbait in general, but like, you know, what is sort of the, you know, is it that short form? Are people's attention spans that short that, you know, you have to hook them in 5 seconds?
You got to keep them. Yes, you do have to hook people in, but you got to keep them there. You know, there's that like marketing thing that people, it's been pretty debunked since, whether it was like people have the attention span of a goldfish and it's 8 seconds long. And if you don't get them in 8 seconds, I think it was Andrew Davis, who's a great marketer. If anybody's listening on and hasn't heard of him, check him out. But he did this great talk like about how if someone's attention span is 8 seconds, how do people like binge Stranger Things and watch like 12 hours of the same TV show over, you know, a weekend or whatever? Like that just, it's because Stranger Things keeps you hooked. So yeah, you want to reel the reader in for sure. I mean, I do a lot of paid media where it's just text on a graphic, but you got to keep them hooked through the whole thing. I'm a really big fan in content creation of kind of having like mini hooks that lead you to the next thing throughout a piece of writing or throughout even a video, where you still set up that anticipation as to what's coming next. So they'll keep reading and they'll keep going. But again, you'll have to deliver on the promise. So yes, capture their attention, but that's not all there is to it. You got to keep that hook going through the entire piece of content.
Dang, that's cool. I've never actually thought about it like that, but it's literally like, yeah, you would do any other kind of story where there's tension and there's like, yeah, and you kind of build up and like reel people back in. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I guess you can really do that with any type of content.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. I guess, do you have any concrete recommendations for content generation using AI? And the reason why I ask is because like, you know, you've probably seen it in all different forms. And like, you know, sometimes people are recommending just using it for outlines, like, hey, it's a good, you know, content starter, an idea generator. And I know you've already kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, AI generated content, if you just take it in its full form, can be, unfortunately, you know, maybe a little too, you know, clinical, or doesn't feel human and have that sort of element to it. So yeah, what sort of like ideas do you think are helpful for utilizing AI as a content generation tool?
AI is an amazing tool for content creators. It is absolutely incredible. As somebody who has been responsible for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of content going out monthly, I cannot stress how incredible it is that we have a tool that helps us write better and faster. It all, though, and I've talked about this a lot, it's all about how you use it. So my advice to anybody who's in content creation is to use ChatGPT to familiarize yourself. Start playing with prompts, start telling it how to write a certain way, start playing with voice. In terms of outlines, yes. In terms of, I'll use it to get variations on social media, you know, captions. Those are the things that kind of get me sometimes the most, is I'll write like this super long form piece of content, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to put on Instagram for it, which is pretty hilarious. Play with it, but it's not endgame. And I don't say don't use chat. I'll say use ChatGPT to write some long form content, but you still need people. Mm-hmm. You still need people. You still need the human element to it. It's my belief, and I think a lot of people who are writers agree, I think Stephen King said this too, is writing is actually rewriting and editing. ChatGPT lays that foundation so that good writers can be great writers, because you are going back and you are honing something over and over and over again, and you have more time to hone. You have more time to do the real work. You also have more time to ideate and be creative if you're not spinning your wheels, coming up with outlines and drafts and briefs or whatever. It's such a great foundational tool. I will say it's not all the way there yet. So when it comes to images, like I'm seeing them all the time now, people put in the ChatGPT images on LinkedIn or on blog posts. I don't think it's there yet. It's just too obvious. But again, as a drawing board for ideas to work off of, I think it's absolutely brilliant. And everybody needs to start. If you haven't started playing with it, like, start. It's also fun. It's fun.
It is totally fun.
Yeah.
Do you think that, you know, future generations of copywriters are not going to know how good they have it because they have a tool like that?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of how technology works, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but then there's the opposite of it. You know, you get like, I don't know, I'm like thinking of that sort of curmudgeon-y back in my day, we played outside and, you know, yeah, but there are like, there are things that you lose when they're, and there are things that you gain, you know? So I think there's no argument though that this is going to be as transformational a tool as the internet was for, I'm as an elder millennial, my generation growing up.
Yeah, I know, at least you didn't say geriatric millennial. That is a brand that I feel like that is the, why would they put that out there? Like, that is a terrible term. Somebody who was a copywriter should have workshopped that.
I'm not geriatric yet. Hopefully someday, but
and I was like, yeah, I am elder millennial. I'm definitely going to start using that. I was like, I am at the top of the spectrum. I was there before the internet, you know, but at the same time, sorry. That is
brand, just no, it's brand. Branding. It's good branding.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, cool. I do think that actually, hopefully we can dig into like some SEO things really quick here. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, it's maybe along the same lines of thinking about AI, but, you know, eventually everyone will be playing the same game. You know, let's say that they'll all be equipped with the same tools and you know, fighting for basically that same real estate on Google, you know, for instance. And I'm trying to think of, you know, about the best way to kind of put this, but, you know, like, do you think this is like, you know, this foundation with, you know, providing wide access to AI and its development, do you think it will make SEO different in its totality?
So it's interesting. I've been writing about this and talking about this and plan to talk about this a lot because I think SEO is going to go back to its roots and its roots being backlinks. So in a world where content creation is democratized and anybody can create hundreds or thousands of pieces of fresh content, hopefully you have a good writers and editors who are making that content quality. But in a world where that playing field is more level, the thing that AI can't do is build backlinks to your site. It can't do it yet. And Google has been so funny watching Google this as an SEO these past couple of years since the launch of ChatGPT and Jasper getting all that funding, where they had the helpful content update, I think like January of 2023. And they said that content written for humans by humans. And they were saying AI content's going to be devalued. Then when they figured out they couldn't detect AI content, they said, well, you know what? No. As long as the content's useful, then we'll value it. And it's just been really, really funny to see. That being said, like, Google initially was called, the algorithm that its founders created was called Backrub, which is a silly name, but it was based on backlinks. And they were two academics, and basically they were saying, if a paper, an academic paper, is being cited in a study, that paper is probably useful and probably has value. And that's what they base their whole algorithm on, is that idea, is links. Links have fallen out of fashion, I think, because there was so much black hat SEO with link building, and content was an easy thing to point to as sort of being like, you know, this heroic, this pure thing. If your content's good, then, you know, but now they don't have that advantage anymore. And I think links are going to be the thing. I think this is the return to form. Link building getting people, hiring SEOs who know how to build links. I broke my teeth building links in this industry. It's not easy. I work for NextNet Media, owns 3 link building brands, the Hoff, Authority Builders, and linkbuilder.io. And one of the reasons why we're so successful is that backlinks are incredibly difficult to get if you are not a huge brand, but they are going to be the competitive edge in a world where everybody can write more.
Cool. That's awesome. I appreciate being, you know, definitive on that. And by the way, I couldn't agree more with, like, you know, returning to kind of like the roots of, you know, SEO. Like, yeah, that's cool. But I guess in general, I have to ask this as a question of, like, you know, just like putting this out there to another SEO. Backlinks, you know, like, super important. And I know that even, you know, for a while, you know, Google was saying, you know, they were like, oh, they're not as important, or we don't pay as much attention to them. But you're like, yes, you do.
Yeah,
like,
you do.
Yeah. We totally know that that's the word. What's your feeling on general traffic and views? You know, of, like, you know, basically, you know, getting a lot of traffic helping increase, you know, rank and visibility too, because I know that they've also tried to dispel that mystery that if you shove a bunch of traffic to a place, but I feel like it definitely helps and gives a boost if you have plenty of traffic, no matter where it's headed from. But yeah, what's your feeling?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. I mean, it's like, I think their job is to say, you know, no, that's not a thing. That's their job. But the data is there. If you have a ton of traffic going to your site, you're going to rank better. Your DR, your DA, whatever metric you're using is going to go up. Your site's going to become more authoritative. Like, their algorithm, like, Google is based on an algorithm. It is not that smart. And there are these very obvious signals that you can put out. And I'm not saying like black hat SEO tactics, things where you're manipulating rankings, those are not sustainable. You might get like a nice boost, but like at the end of the day, they're going to be a waste of resources. They're not going to work. You're going to fall flat. But yeah. Yes.
Yes. Traffic matters.
Traffic matters.
That's cool. It's so funny. Yeah. Wow. You're saying that, like, yeah, they're trying to throw you off of, like, you know, I feel like every piece of data or info or things they drip out there, just like, yeah, don't do this. You know, you're like, but the data says otherwise. Yeah. But this works. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, you know, actually, do you, now this kind of maybe gets into the cookie sort of realm, but is it really a problem that we don't have access to third-party cookie data anymore? I know that there's been lots of speculation on this that, oh my God, it's like, you know, the end of, you know, the marketer's world, that, you know, we don't have that kind of information. And I feel like it's an important, you know, thing that people, I think, should either, you know, understand, mm-hmm. or just, like, you know, be informed about when they think about cookies in general. Not that they shouldn't be, you know, they've got to deal with it. They've got to wrestle with their cookie policies. But what's your feeling on, like, you know, lacking that data that maybe was formerly in place, mm-hmm. To leverage to market people? Is it important, or does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely matters. I think it's just a change of strategy. And if you've been in marketing for the past, I don't know, well, I guess like forever, but I'm really thinking of like all these updates. There have been a ton of recent updates in the past like 5 years or so regarding privacy, and they've impacted email, they've impacted social media, they've impacted paid media. Like, this is not new stuff. It's just one more thing on top of all the other things. For me, with the third-party cookies, if you are using them in your marketing strategy, which of course not everybody is the shift that I would recommend people doing is moving. So not all cookies are the same. There's third-party and there's first-party. First-party aren't going away. First-party are cookies that make people's lives easier. It's when, you know, you log into your Gmail account and it remembers your username, or you go onto Amazon and your cart still has the items that you put in like yesterday. But you can still use first-party cookies to retarget. And what I would recommend people do, and that means, sorry, so first-party cookies means somebody has to visit your website. So what I would recommend people do is drive users to your site. Obviously, I'm going to say SEO is a great way to do that. That's basically what it's for. There are other things where you can create brand awareness. We leverage social media a lot. You can get people to visit your site through there. And then you can use that first party cookie to do that retargeting that those third party cookies would have done. And also, that's a warmer lead. They're more familiar with you. They want to see you. They've visited you. They like you. So I think actually this could be very good for marketers, but you are going to have to shift your strategy.
Cool. Awesome. It's good for SEOs too.
I'm here for it now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Well, you know, I guess being in this game, you're also aware of, as you mentioned, backlinks and, you know, and people know how they're basically, you know, people like you and other people in the industry know they're basically they are important and they're still critical to the success of, you know, sort of rank. And, you know, it's a quality versus quantity argument, I think, that sometimes comes up, like, you know, do I need tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of backlinks, depending on, you know, who you are and what you are and what you're trying to get to in terms of, like, you know, site links. But, you know, what's your maybe feeling on the quality versus quantity thing? And you know, is there any overarching game plan that you usually give to clients?
In general, I always say quality over quantity, unless your website's brand new. If your website's new, then I would go for quantity just to build that solid foundation. And also, it's nice to have a diversified backlink profile. It makes your site look legit to Google. Like, not obviously not all links were created equal, but if you are brand new and you're just getting started, it's okay to build some links that, like, aren't necessarily, you know, an incredibly high, like, DA or have a ton of traffic going to them. That's okay. But if you are an established website, I'd say quality every time. I would much rather get one DA 90 or up backlink than 50 DA 20 backlinks. It's going to make a significant, you'll see a significant difference from one authoritative backlink. You may not see a significant difference from a ton of less authoritative backlinks.
Cool. Awesome. Solid. So SEO and content are, you know, they're always a great foundation for strategy to achieve rank. But, you know, what are your other favorite sort of companion services or offerings or things that basically help augment that, like PR, video? Like, what are those things that you feel like are maybe the best things to employ alongside a solid SEO and content strategy?
So I think SEO is also changing. And so this is going to be, I think, a good answer, but it is going to go back to SEO. And that's, I said this recently, but when you look at, like, the Google results page, it's becoming googlier. So rather than just a list of different websites, you've got your Google Shopping on top. You've got your videos. You've got your People Also Ask. Soon we're gonna have SGE in there, which is worth noting. So there are actually, I would say, a ton of different things to optimize for. I recommend differentiating your content. So if you have a blog post, you're gonna wanna turn it into a YouTube video and get it to rank, because those videos are actually showing up in the SERPs now. It's not just YouTube. If you have an e-commerce site, you're going to wanna optimize for Google Shopping. If you are a brick and mortar business, you're going to wanna optimize to get on that map, to get on the maps list. There are all sorts of ways that you can use SEO and different types of content to dominate the SERPs.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. I would love to continue digging in on SEO topics. Like, this is, like, tons of fun, and I appreciate, like, you know, all of, like, your great responses and also great advice to, like, you know, the people that are listening. The last question that I have for you is actually just a fun one. And I saw that on the Hoth site that you won the Hoth one's competition. and apparently, yeah, you live to tell the tale. That also, congrats. What an esteemed honor. I'm sure that is. But as a person in marketing and media, do you think that the Hot Ones formula, is a repeatable viral sensation? Or was it just a right place, right time? Because I feel like, it touched so many points of our culture. Once you get into SNL, that means, that's a flag mm-hmm. that, hey, that people are paying attention. They're watching. Millions of views are a testament to it. But yeah, do you think anybody could kind of do that again?
Yeah, I mean, of course. And also, if anybody wants to see this video, it's hilarious. Google it, Hoth Ones, H-O-T-H. It's on our YouTube channel. It's our team eating wings like the Hot Ones show, but answering questions about SEO and content. A lot of people went down really hard. It's pretty hilarious. But yeah, I mean, I think it's all right place, right time, right types of content. It's definitely recreatable. I think people need to just stay creative. And that's actually where I think, and this might be sort of a tangent, but like things like ChatGPT and AI are useful because it gives people more time to think of stuff like that, as opposed to having your head down over a screen all day. Yeah, I mean, I love being in marketing because a lot of my job is consuming content and is kind of being up on what's going on in pop culture and the world. And, I think that's also a big piece of it is like being connected to things outside of your industry is a way to get creative and marry whatever niche you're in to what's going on in the world right now. And sometimes it hits.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. All right. How was it after that competition?
I mean, I have a stomach of steel. that was not my first, spicy challenge. I've signed many waivers in my day. They didn't know that I was a ringer coming in, but I knew I was going to win. So
yeah.
I forget the host's name, but like if you want me on Hot Ones, I can do it. Give me a call.
Yeah. All right. There you go. All right. The shout out is to Sean Evans. get you on Hot Ones.
Give me a Hot One.
Honestly, like I really, really appreciate all your feedback, your thoughts and stuff about, SEO and just sharing all this stuff. And definitely if there was any confusion, if you wanted to share anything about like the company things, I know you mentioned them in, response to one thing, but just overall it's the Hoth, but yeah, feel free. I'll let you.
Yeah. So, NextNet Media is the company that I work for and have worked for the past 8 years now. And it's actually the owner, the parent brand of a bunch of other marketing companies. So the one that's probably most well-known is the Hoth. If you're in SEO, it's got the big red monster. We've been around since 2010. We also own Authority Builders, which is a very well-known link building company. And I would say people who are really into SEO and know the industry, that's where a lot of them go for their link building needs. We own linkbuilder.io, which is a huge link building company for enterprises. So some really big brands like HelloFresh, Follow Up Boss, et cetera. And then we have Copymatic, which is an AI generation software tool. Sort of similar to a Jasper, but getting really, really advanced. And we're actually doing a go-to-market pretty soon that employs some really cool SEO software tools into AI content creation. Connects to your Google Search Console, connects to your WordPress. It's gonna be pretty incredible. And then FreeUp Marketplace, which is a freelancer marketplace, sort of similar to an Upwork, but the freelancers are actually chosen, they're curated for you. So you don't have to go through hundreds and hundreds of applicants. It's a more like a concierge service to grow your team.
Wow, that's super cool. Almost like a recruiter, but for freelancers. Yeah.
Exactly. So like if you are looking to, a lot of our clients are in the e-commerce space and they're looking to build remote marketing teams. So but maybe you don't want to deal with the W-2s and the W-9s. You want contract work. And that's been a really cool thing to be a part of, because we acquired that company right, well, this is going to sound horrible actually, but we did acquire the company right before COVID. And we've been able to help a lot of people find work with some really great clients through the pandemic and post.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. No, I mean, like, yeah, fortuitous, a good, yeah.
Yeah.
A good thing in a bad, you know.
I'm kind of crappy, but I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. a good move. But that's awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. And Rachel, I must say, this has been great. Thank you so much for answering all these questions. And really, hopefully everybody can take away some lessons from this. This is awesome. So yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this has been another episode of Mix and Matchbox. I'm your host, Brent Feldman, and we will be back soon with more content. Please like and subscribe. Thank you.